Hi, I'm Danny Elfman.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Debbie Harry.
This is Chris Steyer Blondie.
This is Ronan Dorzabal from Tears for Fears.
This is Billy Idol.
This is Alex Ebert, a.k.a. Edward Sharp, giving the story behind the song.
Hi, this is Peter Chotti, host of The Story Behind the Song. Each month I speak to some of music's biggest artists to get the inside stories behind their most lasting and iconic songs. Join me for new episodes on the third Monday of every month on The Story Behind the Song from the Consequence Podcast Network, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, pod people, Engineer Adam here, jumping in for a quick second to let you know about the brand new all-in-one platform for all of you creative podcasters out there. Anchor makes it easier than ever to make a podcast. It's free to use and has all the creation tools you need to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Plus, Anchor will get your podcast set up on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Even better, Anchor helps you connect with sponsors, even if you're just starting out. It's the perfect choice for podcasters, so make sure to check it out. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. Back to the show.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Pod people, Leo Phillips here with This Must Be The Gig, your little backstage pass to the world of live music. Every single week we bring you fascinating conversations from the beating heart of the performance scene with some of the most exciting names on this big, gigantic, spongy globe. We talk passion, we talk first concerts, insights into the creative mind during this truly unusual time, and everything in the juicy center.
This week, we're excited to share a conversation with the dynamic duo of Tawny Newsome and Bethany Thomas.
Take the ladies from 20 Feet from Stardom, but have them front the White Stripes, I guess?
You may know Tawny as one of the stars of TV shows like Bajillion Dollar Properties, Star Trek Lower Decks, and Space Force. You may know Bethany, meanwhile, for her celebrated musical and theatrical work on Chicago stages such as Steppenwolf and the Green Mill, her own solo music, and performing everything from a Gershwin opera to alt country. Before all that, Tawny and Bethany spent years in Chicago as for-hire backup singers for tribute and cover bands, forging an intense friendship and musical connection, including time as members of UK punk hero John Lankford's Four Lost Souls. This week, Tawny and Bethany's long history of collaboration culminates in their first album under their own names, The Explosive and Magnetic Material Flats. In this chat, Lior spoke with Tawny and Bethany about chasing their own sound after supporting other voices for years, how their passion for music thrives alongside acting careers, the influence of Devo and Talking Heads, and the difference between recording dialogue for Star Trek Lower Decks and recording music for this album. So let us not be delayed. This is Lior, Bethany, and Tawny. Enjoy!
I know you both started, you know, working together in tribute and cover bands in Chicago, which I'm sure must be a time full of really crazy stories on its own. So is that how you both kind of met and decided to work together?
Yeah, I feel like Bethany's got the first part of the... Our story gets more complicated the later it goes. So, Bethany, if you want to take the first half, I feel like you're really good at the succinct part.
Got it. We met doing a musical theater production. It was a show called The Life by Cy Coleman. Mm-hmm. And it was, we played these best friends who were also like, they were hookers with Hearts of Gold.
Oh, great.
So yeah, we played those. We had lots of duets and stuff. And we got along really well. We had a lot of the same kind of offbeat tastes. And I had just started singing backup in some random band, and they wanted another backup singer. And I just asked her if she wanted to come along, see if she wanted, you know, if she was into it. And she was, and we haven't stopped singing together since, but we have done a lot of weird different things.
Yeah. It's definitely been a sprawling secondary career for both of us, in addition to, you know, being actors.
There's different parts that bubble from the different creative projects that you do within your brain. So which part does the music tend to relieve for both of you? Like what part of you really get some sense of, you know, comfort from doing music with one another, especially?
That's a good way to ask a question that I feel like I've answered before in different ways, but the way you're asking it is really, it's making me think about it differently. You know, what I tend to kind of say is like, oh, well, my other career is like, you know, doing TV work and comedy and stuff like that. So that's a very like, it's a very exciting and fun career and I love it. But there's not a lot of opportunity for me to be super earnest or just be like, just kind of purely artistic. Music is better for that and it's much more freeing. But when you say like, where does it bubble from? I think it's like, like, this is the thing that I need to do. I love that I get to work in comedy and do on-camera stuff. But this, even though I don't do music as often as that, this is the thing that I crave and I, you know, I feel like an itch when I've been away from it for too long. Probably because it is so, I don't know, it's just, it's looser. It's easier for me because I guess because we're kind of DIY and we don't have labels to answer to or, you know, anyone to answer to, really.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, it gives you that chance to really set the tone of the things that you want to speak about. Whereas acting, although, of course, if you get given a script, you can take it anywhere and improvisation as well. I don't think you necessarily become another person when you have these different mediums as an, you know, as a performer or as an artist. But I'm always just curious as to where it comes from and what is the thing that, like, you know, like when I write or when I take photos, it that scratches a different itch. And that's like,
yeah,
for me, but without either one of those, I don't know how much of a whole person I would be in the end. Do you know what I mean? So
I do. Oh, sure. I do.
Yeah.
I feel like that's true for both of us. I mean, we've both been, I guess we can easily say we've both been pursuing acting as a primary career and music as a secondary one, but it's not because we love it less. It's for a bunch of, it's for a bunch of financial reasons, I think.
Right.
Yeah. This is kind of the Wild West, you know, making your own stuff and trying to get it out. It's way different than the very structured sorts of jobs that we're usually doing, I think, performance-wise.
You know, there wasn't any routine. There was nobody sitting at the door tapping their foot, like going, okay, when is it done? But is that exciting for you to have that?
Oh, it was very exciting. I had just finished making a solo album of my own, which took a long time to kind of get together. It was very produced, and I love how it turned out.
Mm-hmm.
But we took a lot of time and a lot of resources to get it just right. And this one, it was like we were kind of just riding on the energy that we had and all of our feelings that had just been going crazy, you know, during June, you know, in the middle of this crazy time.
Right.
And there wasn't time. There was an immediacy. There wasn't time to overthink things. And that's partly why I really love working with Tawny in the first place, is because she's able to, she's not as precious, I think, as about the things that you're she's right. putting on the table, where I'm like, I have to think about this for a very long time until it's perfect, and then I'll tell somebody kind of about it. She's like, let's try this. And that's an awesome way to work.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. That's such a compliment from my friend. Thank you. I think, you know, it's funny. I do like to pride myself on not being too precious about things. I'm definitely specific. I think Bethany and I are both,
yes,
you know, we're both kind of 360 artists where we see and hear and feel the whole thing. And we do want things the way we want them. But I also really, you know, I subscribe to the ideology that if you surround yourself with people that you trust and with people whose, you know, work you like, when you can trust them to collaborate, and then you don't have to, you don't have to be precious. You don't have to be as nitpicky. I also, frankly, I mean, I have a massive like safety net, right? Like it's a little bit of a weird privilege to have this other career, you know, kind of making it so that I don't have to worry as much about what I, you know, the music that I make. So yeah, it's very freeing, and this summer was, I mean, we did everything ourselves. Like, I literally taught myself to engineer by watching YouTube tutorials because there was no one else to do it.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I wouldn't have traded any of our insane month and a half of work.
When you do land up doing things like that and getting to the ground core of stuff instead of involving a bunch of people, I do feel like you land up getting so close to whatever you're working on that it almost brings like a new life to it, you know? And that's amazing because you get to spend time like learning a new skill and then also making music.
Yeah, I learned a lot, I think, about how to be, you know, the reason why both of our names are on this album, the reason why it's Tawny Newsome, Bethany Thomas, and the album's Material Flats, instead of coming up with a band name, I felt, we didn't even fully talk this out. Everything's been so like breakneck speed to just try and get this thing out before America falls to pieces and we have to deal with the election right away. We were just like, oh my God, can we please get this out? But we kept our names because, you know, we're both individual artists with our own thing going on, our own varied careers. But when we come together, for me, it was a very visual way to say, here are two artists who have come together to make something new. But, you know, really looking at what both of our names mean and represent and our entire body of work that goes along with that, even if, you know, it's in a different career, even if it's in acting. As opposed to calling ourselves like Homework Class or something, which, believe me, I really wanted to call us Homework Class, but I decided against it.
I feel like there's something, you know, really special about the way, you know, speaking about the way that you two work together, but also the way that your voices work together. And I think clearly the product of having sung together for as long as you have, and also there's like these really beautiful harmonic runs on like different tracks. I wrote a few of them down that I was so excited by, like White Balloon feels a little, you know, like very mystical. And do you two have that kind of spiritual inclination in music, or is it more mathematical?
I feel like it kind of depends on the track or the line, actually. I suppose if it's something where we want to lead it with something that's like more soulful or bigger or something, maybe I'll take the lead and like Tawny will like compliment that.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly feel like a lot of the time we're just, it's more of a storytelling thing and like keep things interesting kind of thing. And phrasing kind of stuff, just like, you know, sometimes we'll write something where the lyrics are kind of ambiguous and I'm coming from a totally different place than Tawny is. And like, maybe that's something to use in the way we sing it. We definitely do like the math part of it.
Right.
Yeah. I like the math. I like the counting. Bethany doesn't love to count. There's a run at the end of our second track on the album, You're Still Up, that Bethany wrote. She just heard it in her head. She counted it out. Or I'm sorry, she did not count it out. She sang it to me. I tried to learn it. But as I'm sitting there going, like, I'm literally clapping and going, hey, hey, hey. She's like, I don't know what those claps mean. I don't know why you're, it doesn't matter. Like, ignore the, I'm like, the claps tell me where to sing the moves that you're doing. And she's like, well, I don't know where those are. So if that helps you, great. But it's like not how
she
works.
No claps in my song.
No claps.
Right. But I mean, I think that's so funny how you landed up finding some sort of way, obviously by being friends, but you know, you managed to find that middle ground, I guess. That, do you feel like that is more because of your experience of working together, or because you both were very close to the material that you were singing about?
We kind of know each other's instincts now.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say. That's funny.
Yeah, even if we don't have the same, okay. Even when they're not the same, we kind of like, I'll sometimes like, I know where Tawny likes to sing usually, and she knows like what I can do.
I tend to write a vocal line, you know, if any of the demos that I wrote that we started with, I'll write a vocal line that I want to hear, and I won't necessarily decide who's going to sing it, because there are, you know, certain limitations to my range and my like amount of power that Bethany does not have. Like, she has more range and more power. And then I think I have different textures that I maybe access more easily. So depending on what the vocal line that I've written needs, like sometimes I write a line and it's not till we're recording it that I'm like, oh, you have to sing that because it doesn't sound like how I hear it when I do it. We've gotten our studio technique really down. Like, I think we're probably some of the best, like, vocal session directors. Like, if we wanted a third career, we could probably produce and direct vocals, because a lot of times you get, you know, you get a lead singer type dude in a booth who maybe is really talented and has a great voice, but like they haven't spent the time necessarily learning like mic technique or learning to sing classically like Bethany and I maybe have, or, you know, just different just voice technique stuff. So when we're in there, even if we're just lending, you know, back in the day when we would just sing backing vocals for someone for $150, I would often find myself telling the lead singer like, oh, hey, well, if you want, you know, to hit that pitch better, you could kind of darken your consonant. That stuff comes really naturally to both of us. Right. So this is the first time that we've gotten to just like use all of those skills that we've sort of been giving to other people and other people's projects and just use them all for us.
Yeah. Fuck it. Thank God. Finally. It's like, there's only so much you can tell other people how to do that, you know. Although obviously you weren't doing it like with disdain. You were doing it because you also know that if somebody next to you is at their best, you are also at your best.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's really nice to take the things that you've learned and put it to your own projects and be a little selfish with it.
Yeah.
Did you have any hesitation of the things that you were speaking about, or was it like, I have to get this out? Like, how much of it was a purge and how relieving was that for both of you?
Depending on the song, it was different. You know, like there are...
Right.
You know, for instance, the song Pincushion is literally about the like beautiful mountain that I am so fortunate to live on. It's literally about all of the different like local native plants, and it's kind of a weird, you know, metaphor for being nervous about things dying and the heat that we knew was coming, because when we recorded this in June and when I was kind of writing some of the lyrics back in May, you know, everything around me was green and lush and beautiful, and then, you know, California goes through a terrifying fire season that gets longer and longer. So I basically wrote a song just like desperate to hang on to, you know, when things are verdant and safe. And then it's ironic. This is a bit of a tangent, but then it's ironic that, or not ironic, I guess it was inevitable that, of course, like wildfire absolutely ripped through my community, spared my house, but like decimated my neighbors' homes. And all I can think is like, oh my God, I wrote that song not even knowing that this is what I was worried about. So some of these things are a little spooky to me, how they came about. I mean, Bethany just walked into the studio one day and goes, we need a song called Juneteenth 2020. And then she just like whipped out a guitar and wrote it. Like, I feel like he wrote it in 10 minutes.
That's such a breathtaking track. It's like this powerful and insistent song that really pushes and, gosh, it like taps into something vocally that I feel is very different from the rest of the album. That must have felt amazing to reach that place for, you know, for both of you for this particular album.
We definitely were trying to, and I came in, you know, with the parts that I came in with, definitely trying to do something that was speaking to our influences that don't always come across when we're singing, because we have... You know, we have big sounds. We do. We can do small sounds too. But like, we also listen to a lot of Gang of Four and Devo and Talking Heads and amazing. we like those sounds and we can do that too. So I think it was kind of like, let's try to do something that's a little bit just different, just not pushing the vocal thing, but just telling a story in a different way. And touching on just different sounds and textures that aren't always communicated with what we're listening, you know, from where we're coming from. The back half of that, though, Tawny, like, she came up with a little guitar riff. She's like, I want this out of, you know, like, it's going to be this weird pattern that does it differently every time. Coming up with these little vocal parts.
The math.
Like,
the math again.
Yeah. Yep.
Was that a heavy track to write? Like, was that something that just came out? Like, you know, Tony said that Bethany just like walked in and had it. So it feels like it just was there. Waited.
I mean, Bethany wrote the more, probably what you're getting at, like the more emotionally charged part. But for the back half that I wrote, I was just so thrilled to basically write, you know, in 60 seconds, I just wanted to write like a full love letter to like Remain in Light or to the Pixies, which are, you know, Talking Heads and the Pixies are two of my biggest influences.
Oh,
and
my God,
don't feel like, you know, I don't feel like I get to play in that world very often because of the way that I sound. And so I just really wanted to do this like polyrhythms, these weird layered angular sounds. And so, the words weren't, I borrowed words from the beginning that Bethany had written.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the genres and styles and kind of art forms that the two of you have worked in is such an extreme spectrum. I mean, when you were singing with John Langford in Four Lost Souls, it like verged on like, I don't, like folk. And then there are parts of Material Flats that like reach somewhere between punk, like you were saying, and you mentioned obviously Talking Heads. There's definitely that influence. And I mean, is it just the song becoming itself through the same process when you're adding those influences? Like, was the song meant to go that way anyway? Or is it like very, as you said, mathematical? Like, you really want to bring that in because your, you know, voices don't really get a chance to do that.
The idea of using a more punk-forward, rock-forward sound to with these words is not a coincidence. Like, I definitely, you know. I definitely, like Tawny said, she's like, I don't think there's ever been a punk song called Juneteenth, you know, a punk song about Juneteenth.
Right.
We just...
Maybe Saul Williams has one somewhere.
Maybe. So it was definitely like I'm looking for that I can't think of the word.
I know what you mean.
Juxtaposition, you know, where we're hearing basically kind of like this beat coming in from a Buzzcocks song, but it's actually a black woman talking about moving through the country and the things she's learning and the things she is claiming.
Is it about like inserting yourself into a place where you might not have had the opportunity to be? Or is it just because like, why the hell not? Like, why are there rules to what certain voices should sound good in certain genres and things like that?
For me personally, I think it's more about stating that we actually have been here. I mean, you know, you sing with Langford and Mekons long enough, the line between folk, soul, art punk, it's all so blurred to the point that in my head, like a lot of that stuff is one genre. Like a lot of the folky stuff that we do on the Muscle Shoals album, Four Lost Souls, is, you know, siblings to a song like Juneteenth. And that's because the people that we've come up with have blended those genres for years now. And we've been there with them. We've been right alongside John. Yeah. I've been singing with John for 10 years now. Wow. So whereas maybe people don't see a lot of women like us in these genres, we've been here.
Right.
That's what we've come up doing. And it still seems like such a surprise all the time. It's like, no, that's...
Revel when people do go, they don't start changing just because society has said that certain genres should remain in certain boxes. Yeah. I kind of feel like that's really where music should go. Like that's where art should go.
I feel like the genre, the way that we've been brought up talking, you know, using that word in regards to music is kind of dying.
Right.
I hope, I feel like it's still useful in very broad senses, depending on what you're into. But my favorite artists do take things from all genres, So I feel like that's what, we do too. That's how you make something new and cool.
Pause the podcast.
it's time to step away from the conversation with Tawny and Bethany ever so briefly to share a special segment. We typically like to share our favorite live show or live stream of the week, but we want to continue putting a spotlight where it's most needed and instead highlight an organization we think you should contribute to. This week we're highlighting World Central Kitchen, an organization which has been providing fresh meals to the communities hit the hardest by COVID, as well as to families affected by the California wildfires. To learn more and contribute, head to WCK.org. That's WCK.org. But for now, back to Lior, Bethany, and Tawny. Enjoy!
But when you were kids, both of you, were there different inspirations when it comes to performing music and then performing as actors? Or were there people that acted as a sort of dual inspiration for both of those mediums?
I was all over. Well, no, my dad played guitar in like local rock bands and stuff, and I sometimes get to sit in on like band practice, and you get to hear a lot of hard, loud rock. That's what he was into. He was not into the pop stuff, the Michael Jackson and stuff that my mom was into. So I you know, grew up listening to a lot of harder stuff and just, you know, top 40 things. And then I got into theater and a lot more classical, legit ways of singing. And like madrigal choir and stuff. But it wasn't like, even in high school, for me, it was not weird to, you know, have your choir practice, go to your musical theater rehearsal, and then go to like a ska punk show at the American Legion. That was my journey when I was 17, you know.
It's
not that different now, I guess, but.
Yeah, you're still going to ska punk shows most nights, aren't you?
You know me so well out there at the ska
show. Bethany, I was so excited to see that you're performing in a few days, even like on stage, not just, you know, live in the ether, but you're going to be at the Hideout in Chicago, which is one of my favorite venues here since moving here. It's like, you know, but that, I know that will be live streamed still for fans at home, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm very excited. I'm trying to figure out what the hell that I'm going to do it.
Right now. You're going to be great. You're going to be amazing.
Yeah, you're going to be perfect. And Tawny, for you, was also when you were listening to things when you were younger, did that shift and change over the years? Were you also kind of all over the show with what you were loving?
I was, yeah. I mean, you know, I always wanted to sing. So I used to love, like, I loved Bonnie Raitt. I loved Trisha Yearwood. I loved these, like, poppy, bluesy country voices. Probably because their ranges were closest to mine and the songs were hooky without being too poppy. I think I felt a little like, you know, I felt a little, I was a little adult contemporary for my youth. But then I also really loved, like, I've always tended towards light metal, like, ooh, just a dusting of kind of metally guitars and sort of that 90s, like, oh gosh, I used to love like I loved a Nine Inch Nails or a, you know, just some hard sounds, which does not go with a Bonnie Raitt melody line usually. So maybe that's a good explanation for how this record kind of came together.
No, that is it.
So I would have just like introduce you if Nine Inch Nails and Bonnie Raitt like meets. That's how I just yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, sure.
I was just going to say, we started to tell people, like, could they be like, what's the genre for this album? And we'd be like, so like, take the ladies from 20 Feet from Stardom, but have them front the White Stripes, I guess.
Do you guys remember the first time each of you sang in front of a crowd or performed, maybe not necessarily sang, but just performed in front of humans?
I think I was in Cinderella. I think I was 5 years old. And I was in Cinderella, and I was one of the dancing pieces of laundry that comes to life. And all we had to do was bring one of our dad's oversized, like, work shirts and just spin around on stage. That's probably my first one.
Oh, my God. That's so great. Were you nervous at all? Do you remember? Or did you absolutely love it, even from a young age?
No, I'm one of those insane performing sociopaths. I've really never... I can count on one hand the times I've been nervous in my life. It's just...
Really?
You just... You don't die, you know? You're not... It's not going to kill you. So what is there to stress?
Oh, man, I feel like you need to just like... broadcast that to every performer, because I feel like I speak to so many people who either have your mentality or just always say that they just know things are going to go wrong, so they're more pessimistic about it.
I feel for folks like that. I don't know why I'm wired this way. I'm super grateful for it, but I have respect for people who do experience those nerves and still pursue the profession. That's
right,
so much
right,
harder
push. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do your nerves come in then? What do you get nervous about, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh my gosh. I mean, my anxiety is boiling these last few weeks because I'm in a weird hotel in Atlanta trying to finish filming a movie, and I'm just like,
yeah,
you know, they're keeping us so isolated, which is great. The production feels very safe, but like every time I go outside, I'm just watching people sit in bars and not wear masks, and you know, then I'm like, humanity's doomed. So I guess I'm not scared on stage because I'm worried for humans and the earth.
Yes, I hear you. But so do you remember the first time you were you performed in front of a crowd?
Well, I remember doing a couple in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where I grew up. There was a thing called the Theater Wagon.
Okay.
And it was basically like a summer arts program, and you'd do a play, but there was like this trailer that they'd bring it into a park, and you'd had to like crank down the stage on this trailer. Like one of the sides was a stage that would crank down, and then you'd go and do like Raggedy Ann and Andy.
Oh, great.
So I remember having bit parts in a couple of those shows when I was probably like 8 or 9 or something. But I feel like the first time that I sang in front of a bunch of people, like on my own terms, was a fifth grade talent show. And I sang Save the Best for Last by Vanessa Williams.
Yes.
Oh my God, you know I love her. I spoke to her the other day. Oh my God, she's great. Yeah.
You spoke to her the other day?
Cool.
That's so cool.
That's so cool.
I was doing like this whole piece on, oh my God, what did she sing? It was Pocahontas. I was doing like,
oh yeah, Colors of the Wind. She did the pop version, of course.
She did that version, and I called her, and like she was the most chill.
Oh, that's great. That is dope. Yeah.
Oh my God, that song is so great. I love that you chose that for a talent show. That's cool.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
I think my first talent show, I chose like 311, What's My Age Again or something. Like,
you did not.
Something so pop
punk. What's
that?
Is that Blink 182? What is that?
I think it's Blink 182. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, but wait, did you sing
something with the number in it?
Did you sing like all the parts? Like, how did you do that on your own?
Yeah, I was like, I really wish I had video of this to witness.
I think I have. Okay, there are two stories that are very quick and similar, but I think I had my little baby cousins sing other parts in it. And I think I tried to make a video, but I didn't have, you know, back then video cameras were so hard. Right. That's what I remember from that. And then the other weird thing that I did around this same time was me and a couple classmates in sixth grade had all gotten together to watch the movie Evil Dead. And we decided to make a play of it in our sixth grade classroom. And our teacher let us. What? She let us do this.
Wait, did she think that you didn't know, like, what was going on? Like, how did she, how did she trust you?
I think she had a different movie in mind. And so when we said we'd like to do this as a project, the whole class can be involved. We're going to write parts for everybody. We're going to make costumes. I think she was like, oh, cool. These kids came up with an assignment for themselves. Then she got sick for 2 weeks. So we practiced it every day with a substitute. And the sub was like, well, I guess Miss Finian said you could do this, so go ahead. And then when Miss Finian came back, we presented it to her, and she was horrified. She thought she was going to get fired.
That's amazing.
And the whole time the sub is just like trying to be supportive and like, of course, she told you should do this.
The teacher says so. Okay.
Yeah. I was a weird kid in sixth grade between those two stories.
And then talking about just like the first times of things, do you remember the first live performance that you ever saw, each of you, the first concert that you went to?
Bethany has a cool one.
Mine was Michael Jackson. It was in 1988 on the Bad Tour.
That is a rad. Mine was Michael Jackson, but on the History one, because he came to South Africa. That's so funny.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's still MJ. Oh, my God. I hate him, but I still love him, you know?
Right? I know. I hate admitting it, even. I hate saying, but I can't erase my history. Like, that's who I saw, you
that's
know?
That's the thing. Yeah. I can't erase, yeah. like, everything that... he means to me and my yeah anyway we don't need to talk about Michael Jackson. Tawny, what was your favorite? Yeah.
Oh, happy to lighten the mood. My first concert, I was 13 and I saw Hootie and the Blowfish. So really just keeping it cool and classy here.
Wow. Hootie, I mean, listen, they were huge. Like, let's not, like, they are nerdy but huge. They people loved yeah. them.
Yeah, it was a lot of 35-year-old couples there that loved okay. them. And then me.
You just standing there. That's so funny.
I told you. I was adult contemporary. That was my aesthetic.
I think that's right, though. I think that this all works out between the two of us. Us, our first people, like, concerts we saw were Black artists doing unconventional, like, their own sorts of things, mm-hmm. Yeah. music-wise, like, bowing to no one, to no tradition, and...
Yeah, chicks.
And
that's so funny.
Yeah, this all makes sense. No,
but, like, I'm like that math lady meme, you know, when all the, like, numbers yeah. spin around her head, and I'm like, oh! That's so
You're
funny.
Like, I've solved it!
Yeah, but, I mean... do you know, when you guys are, like, looking at, like, your history and all the things that you've done, when, you know, I'm also curious whether you feel some of your creative process or part of your brain is activated when you're improvising as well. Because I suppose creating an album and also writing, there is improvisation in there. But then also just knowing that that's, you know, work that you've done as well. So are those completely separate, improvising as opposed to, like, working with people in music? Do you feel like you can improvise a lot when you are hired to do certain things?
Yeah, I mean, like, in my TV career, I'm to the point now where if I do get hired for something, they're like, and now we want you to improvise. Like, they're kind of waiting for me to throw the script out the window.
Right.
Yeah, which I'm delighted to do because I spent so long just having, like, four lines in the background and bursting, you know. So now I'm really lucky that I get to just, like, play a lot. And I'll just say that what it's done for me in the studio when I turn on that other part of my brain is that I'm not, you know, we talked before about not being super precious with things, but I also know I have a confidence in, like, being able to execute something kind of swiftly and doing it well and knowing that I'll like it and not worrying about second guessing it because, yeah, I guess because I have a comfort level with myself that I know comes from improv because you just, you know, you say made up things for so many years in front of so many people and get rewarded for it. It's got to change your brain a little bit. So for better or worse, I'm pretty comfortable with that.
I mean, you speak about it like it's so easy. I'm not going to lie. Like, anyone who's going to listen to this show and listen to the two of you speak, they are going to probably write an album the next day or something because how chill.
Yeah, I hope they do.
Like, I feel like there's no, but I love that in a way because there is so much confidence, but it isn't confidence as in I just, you know, blatantly, you know that I'm doing the right thing. It's that you have found your voices in many different things. And I love that you have found that because it really, like, I mean, I feel like I can do something now. I don't know, the way
you definitely can and should. I also think that, like, we both don't feel like, it's not like we think we can execute something this easily and think it's perfect. If anything, for me, I'm comfortable with it not being perfect as long as it's 100% mine and I didn't feel like I made any compromises. So I'm happy with it not being the best. It's you know, it came from us, and that's what I love.
What about the difference between recording like for you, like dialogue for something like Star Trek, Lower Decks, and then recording music in a studio? And Bethany, also all the different projects that you work on, like, did you have different rituals when the two of you like got into the studio together? You recorded in the same space, obviously.
Yeah, in my little home studio. Yeah. I think our ritual is tequila.
Okay.
Yeah.
before, during, or after, or all of the above?
That probably, maybe not before when we had our morning sessions.
But, okay.
but definitely during sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's less tequila when I'm recording an animated show, for sure.
Okay.
Oh, I bet.
So how long was the whole recording process in total for you guys? You said that you got together in June, started writing in May, and then got together in June.
I think we were only together for 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, we were there the last 3 weeks of June. Like, my friend and I are guitar player, and I drove over there from Chicago to the desert.
Yeah.
And she'd had some of her demos put together. There were probably like 4 or 5 things where she'd have, you know, some music out, and a couple of them she'd had all the lyrics written out, and then a couple were just a couple hook ideas. But the bulk of stuff was put together in the 3 weeks that we were together.
Wow. That seems quick. But I mean, I'm sure in your lives, like, things happen so quickly. So I'm sure that didn't seem like a quick amount of time, like a short amount of time.
It did feel kind of short, actually. But I think it was just because we kept everything that we would do, like, once we got one thing done, we're like, well, I think we can get another song done then. I don't even really think we set out to make like a whole album at first. That didn't seem like something that we could really do. And then when we started doing it, we're like, oh, we can absolutely get all of this together if we really just do it.
You know, where I live, it's really rural, and my husband and I are very DIY, and so we make a lot of things. And in addition to music, we just like build things. And so one day at breakfast, because we would do like family style meals whenever we could, we'd made a bunch of breakfast, and I just like came out of my bedroom, and I just looked at Nate and Bethany, and I was like, okay, well, we need a rocker. And Nate was like, okay, like a chair, I guess I can build that. Like, where do you want to put it? And I was like, no, like for the album.
Like, so great.
I was trying to say we needed another upbeat, you know,
yeah.
We needed a rocker.
Is there a show or perhaps like, I don't know, a live performance or just something, even, you know, not music related, that either of you have seen that really inspired you to do what you do now?
I think I took a lot of inspiration from our friend Ted Leo. He plays on the last song on this album with us.
Yes.
But his album that he put out a couple years ago, that he did, you know, very DIY himself. He recorded it all in his home himself. He, you know, completely no label. He crowdfunded it and just did everything and really did so much. Yeah, so watching him perform, he came to the Echo in LA, or was it Terragram? I don't remember. He might have played both. But I was just watching him play and hearing him kind of talk in between. And, you know, this is a guy who's been on big labels, been on small labels, and now doing his own thing. And I feel like he's really able to, I don't know, like you see different sides of him in his music now. And I hope that that's because he has the freedom to make whatever he wants. So, yeah, I would say that. And, I mean, it's not a live show, but I watched I May Destroy You, and I was like, we have to do everything ourselves. Just everything has to be ours. So that's been my rallying cry this whole year.
And you, Bethany, was there anybody that you saw that kind of influenced how you perform or just shifted a few things for you in terms of performance in general?
There's such a conglomerate, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I can think of, like, there's a show that we did one time that I think about all the time where I was like, oh, we're just, don't give a fuck. We're just going to do what we want. Like, we were, the Four Lost Souls were playing in this church that didn't even have like a restroom built in it. That's how old it was.
Oh god.
Like,
oh, in yeah. Wales.
We were,
yes.
Remember in where were we in Larne? We were in Wales.
Larne, Wales, yeah.
Oh my god.
But like we're playing this thing and people were into us. Cool. There's a little bit of like light show going on that we were not accustomed to, and shit was just kind of falling together. And we have this one song where we just decided when we do it we're gonna start marching around. Okay. But in this one, we're standing like on a stage and all these people are watching us in pews. And it was kind of just a moment where we looked at each other and then John Langford is just kind of like, yep. And we're like, okay, we are stomping all over the pews of this church, screaming about the devil.
We climbed on the pews.
Like,
I forgot about that.
Yes.
Wait, were there people?
I think about it all the time. Yes.
Yeah, some of them.
Yes, well, it's like, fuck a microphone. We're just crawling around this church screaming. Oh like, and I was like, this is the most rock and roll that has ever happened.
Wait, did anybody, what did everyone do? Were they just absolutely loving
it? Oh, no, they're into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're totally into it.
Oh, it's a weird festival that like honors Dylan Thomas because his home was there. So right? It's kind of this groovy, like.
It was like, you know, a literary festival.
Yeah, it's a literary festival of like groovy kind of sex positive hippies. And
oh my God.
They didn't necessarily know what we were going to do, but I think they were into it just because it was weird. It's a weird place.
I feel like that energy when you do bring it into the crowd, it just makes it feel like we're all in this together. Why? Like it's almost more human, you know?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. You're acknowledging the weirdness.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's fucking weird. Right. Yeah.
It's so fucking weird. Especially us. We're weird. Anything I've ever done with Langford is weird. We did this when we opened for Robert Plant at the Pritzker a couple years
ago. We sure did.
Too. We climbed all over shit. Because the crowd didn't want us. They don't want to see us. And they shouldn't.
Right.
They did not. They did not care.
This Must Be the Gig is produced by Adam Kivel. We'd like to thank Dean Berger and Daniel Brater for additional music, as well as the Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey! If you've listened this far, why not go the extra mile and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts? Your comments provide valuable feedback for us and it helps other people find us too. For information on new episodes, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at TMBTGpod, and generally just irritate everyone you know about the show. Thanks again, and I miss you already.
Consequence Podcast Network.